At age 8, Eleanor Roosevelt stood at her mother's deathbed, already acquainted with a loneliness that would have broken most children. 2 years later, her beloved father, the one person who made her feel cherished, was also gone. Left in the care of a stern grandmother, in a house where children were seen but not heard, she developed what she called a perpetual fear of darkness, of displeasing others, of her own inadequacy. Yet this frightened child would become the woman who stared down Soviet diplomats, championed civil rights when it threatened her husband's presidency, and helped write the moral blueprint for the modern world. How does a girl paralyzed by fear transform into a woman of unshakable courage? The answer lies not in conquering fear, but in learning to act despite it. Eleanor's privileged upbringing offered little preparation for revolution. As an awkward debutante, she felt perpetually out of place, too tall, too serious, lacking her relatives' effortless beauty. Everything changed at Allenswood, a London finishing school, where headmistress Marie Souvestre became the first person who ever touched my mind, teaching Eleanor to think independently. More importantly, Souvestre trusted her. At 16, Eleanor managed their European travels, purchasing tickets, arranging accommodations, navigating foreign schedules. These genuine responsibilities built self-reliance. Returning to New York, she carried this confidence into settlement house work, teaching immigrant children and investigating garment factories while other society girls attended endless teas. Yet marriage would temporarily strip away this hard-won independence, revealing how fragile confidence becomes when we allow others to define our worth. When Franklin proposed in 1903, 19-year-old Eleanor accepted, though she didn't understand what loving truly meant. The early years brought 6 children in 10 years and suffocating control from mother-in-law Sarah, who dictated household decisions and child-rearing. "I was becoming entirely dependent," Eleanor wrote, "someone always deciding everything for me." Then came 1918, Franklin's affair with Lucy Mercer, her social secretary. "The bottom dropped out of my own particular world," Eleanor recalled, "and I faced myself, my surroundings, my world honestly for the first time." They remained married. Sarah insisted, Franklin's ambitions demanded it, but what could have destroyed her instead liberated her. She began forging an independent identity, pursuing her own interests, building her own political network. In 1921, Franklin contracted polio. Eleanor became his eyes, ears, and legs, traveling extensively, reporting what she witnessed, developing her own powerful voice. She joined the Democratic State Committee's Women's Division, learned public speaking, and transformed from shy political wife into formidable force. Their marriage evolved into an unprecedented political partnership that would reshape American democracy itself. When Franklin took office in 1933, Eleanor rejected the traditional First Lady role. She held press conferences exclusively for WIMS reporters, forcing news organizations to hire female journalists. She wrote My Day, a daily column reaching millions. Most radically, she traveled everywhere, coal mines, tenant farms, urban slums, migrant camps, becoming Franklin's most trusted observer. In West Virginia mining communities, she witnessed families in company houses without basic utilities. In one house, after deductions for rent and supplies, the father received less than $1 weekly in cash for a family of 6, she observed. Her firsthand accounts shaped New Deal policies. Her civil rights advocacy was groundbreaking. When the Daughters of the American Revolution refused to let black contralto Marian Anderson perform at Constitution Hall in 1939, Eleanor resigned her membership and helped arrange Anderson's historic concert at the Lincoln Memorial, drawing 75,000 people. She pushed for anti-lynching legislation, visited the Tuskegee Airmen, and invited African-American guests to the White House, despite warnings this would cost Franklin Southern support. During World War II, she traveled 25,000 miles in 5 weeks, visiting Pacific troops. Franklin's death in April 1945 left 60-year-old Eleanor facing uncertainty. "I knew what I didn't want," she wrote. "No elaborate household, no feeling of uselessness, no surrender to old age." When friends offered to form a committee to plan her life, she firmly declined. "You can't run my life." President Truman's appointment of Eleanor as UN delegate drew skepticism. Could a former first lady handle such responsibility? She proved doubters wrong by becoming the driving force behind the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, her greatest achievement. As chair of the Commission on Human Rights, she navigated Cold War tensions through late-night drafting sessions, building consensus among 58 nations with vastly different political systems. Her diplomatic skills shone during confrontations with Soviet representatives. When Andrei Vyshinsky challenged Western refugee policies, Eleanor responded passionately against forced repatriation, successfully defending individual choice. Senators who'd initially opposed her appointment told her afterward, "We did all we could to keep you off the delegation, but now we must acknowledge that we have worked with you gladly." Eleanor's post-White House years were remarkably productive. She lectured 150 times yearly, wrote her columns 6 days weekly, hosted radio and television programs, and traveled globally, Japan, India, Yugoslavia, Morocco, twice to the Soviet Union. In each country, she insisted on meeting ordinary citizens, particularly women and workers, to understand their struggles. Eleanor observed how Soviet influence resonated in emerging nations. The Russians can say to developing nations, "We know your conditions. Our people were once hungry too. Look what we've accomplished in 40 years." This narrative of rapid transformation appealed powerfully to nations struggling against poverty and colonialism. America's response must transcend military deterrence, demonstrating that democratic freedom offered both material progress and spiritual dignity. This conviction drove her passionate advocacy for Kennedy's Peace Corps, where young Americans could share our skills, attitudes, and principles as free people while developing genuine cross-cultural understanding. In her final years, Eleanor articulated an expansive American dream pushing beyond national boundaries. "My new concept is actually the original one," she wrote. "Our founders envisioned universal opportunity, dreaming not just for Americans, but for all mankind." She challenged the rising generation to embrace unprecedented opportunities for global development, if they possessed the courage to seize them. Eleanor Roosevelt died on November 7, 1962, at age 78, having fundamentally transformed women's roles in American public life and global affairs. Her evolution from shy orphan to internationally respected humanitarian exemplified her principle: you must do the thing you think you cannot do. Her legacy lives on in the UN and its Universal Declaration of Human Rights and in expanded rights for women, minorities, and disadvantaged populations worldwide. What distinguished Eleanor wasn't eliminating fear, but acting despite it. Personal tragedy became purpose. Marital betrayal became independent identity. Her husband's paralysis became partnership in reshaping American democracy. Post-war devastation became the blueprint for human rights. "Where do universal human rights begin?" she once asked. "In small places, close to home, where every person seeks equal justice, equal opportunity, equal dignity without discrimination." This wasn't abstract philosophy, but lived wisdom from someone who'd witnessed humanity's darkest moments yet maintained faith in our potential for goodness. Eleanor Roosevelt's life demonstrates that moral clarity, personal courage, and unwavering commitment to human dignity can transform both individual lives and global institutions. Her life poses a question we each must answer. Will we let fear define us, or will we do the thing we think we cannot do?